So we are going to look at Isaiah 9, 1-4, and in the Hebrew Bible, the versification is different. It's actually 8:23 through 9:3. So this happens occasionally, and we will not elaborate on that any further. Yeah. So the historical context here is helpful. Apparently, the best that we can do in terms of reconstructing a Sitzim Leben for this, Isaiah is reflecting upon the two campaigns of the Neo-Assyrian king Tiglath-Pileser III, 734 and 732. And what he did is he decided to exile, the tribes of Zebulun and Naphtali, and renamed these areas with Assyrian names. And those would be, well, I wrote them down just in case I forgot, because I want to make sure I speak the truth here. Dularu, Magadu, Galazu. Alright? So these two Israelite tribes are now renamed, and that would actually be a homiletical point someone could progress further with. That is to say, the enemy always wants to rename us. Maybe the best example of that would be in the book of Daniel, where Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah are renamed Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, or Shadrach and Benny, or your shack, my shack, and a bungalow. So the enemy, I'm sorry, the enemy always wants to rename us. See, hopeless, forever guilty, forever living in shame. See, so the enemy has renamed these places, and Isaiah is going to reclaim them back. So that would be the first comment. The second comment really would be the last two words of the pericope, Kiyom Midyan. So Isaiah likens all of this restoration like the day of Midian. So this would be Judges 6, 7, and 8, and Gideon with the mighty menace and Midianites, who are a crop-destroying plague deploying and quite annoying. And fond to fight and strike like lightning, man, they're frightening. And they kill, steal, and destroy every man, woman, girl, and boy. Because they're mighty men of Midianites. Well, so this gives us a window into what this new thing Yahweh is going to do. And in Judges 7, verse 14, they attack the Midianites. There's 120,000 of them. There's only 300 Abiezerites who lap water like dogs. And they have these torches. And apparently there's this huge ball of light looks like there's more with Gideon than there really are. And the Midianites, in classic holy war fashion in the Old Testament, destroy themselves. So what is going to happen here is going to be analogous to that. Probably the near fulfillment of this would be in the Josianic Reformation in 2 Kings chapters 22 and 23, where Josiah actually marches north and reclaims the northern tribes for Judah. So the great light there probably homiletically would be Psalm 119:104, your word is a lamp to my feet, a light to my path, because in rebuilding the temple, Josiah's repairman found a ha-sofer, ha-torah, whatever that is probably some section of Deuteronomy. So there's lights there. And of course, we will get to the New Testament here in Matthew chapter 4, where there would be more light for Zebulun and Naphtali. So those are a few introductory comments on some very familiar verses. And before I get to it, homiletically, you could say that Gideon's light went out, with his son Abimelech, who led Israel into apostasy. Josiah's light went out when he died in 609 at the Battle of Megiddo. But this, the greatest light in Jesus, John 1:5, the darkness has not overcome it. Kata lambano, right? Yep. Or understood it. So this light will shine forever, unlike these precursors, these types we have in Isaiah and in the Old Testament. All right, so, kilo mu'af. So indeed, not gloom. All right. La asher mutzakla. And to which darkness to her, literally, probably referring to the Eretz, which is a feminine noun. And then moving on, Ke'et ha-Rishon, Hekal. Isaiah, especially in 40 to 55, talks about the former things and the latter things a lot. And so we'll see the latter things coming here momentarily in verse 23. But in a simplistic way, the ha-Rishon would be the times of darkness and judgment. Due to the, in this case, the Neo-Assyrian army, but then the Veha Akaron, the latter things, would be a time of grace and mercy. And we kind of have this paradigmatic pericope in Isaiah 2:1-5 that most scholars would say is the thematic, if not theological, center of the book. And it's in the latter days when Yahweh will rebuild the house on Mount Zion. So everything is certainly pushing toward the Acharon. So in Isaiah chapter 43, verse 19, we kind of classically have forget the former things, don't dwell on the past, behold, I'm doing a new thing. So forget the shame, the guilt, the renaming here, because Yahweh's going to do a new thing. So we kind of already have these new thing ideas sprouting up here in our pericope in chapters 8 and 9. So in the time, like the 8, like the time of the former, Hekal, that would be a Hifil from Hifil Perfect, Third Master and Singer, from Kalal. Kalal is just where we get the call aspect, right? Light. To have Kalal in the Piel or Hifil means to curse. See? So in the former time, he cursed. See? What did he curse? Artsah. Now this is a little strange. This is Eretz with directional hay. So he cursed Zebulun, earthward or landward, and landward Naphtali. I don't think any of the versions pick that up. Just the land of Zebulun and the land of Naphtali. But we're trying to account for the comet's hay at the end. Okay, so that's what happened in the previous era, dispensation. It was gloom, mu'af, and it was distress, mutzak. But now, see that vav probably disjunctive, but the latter times, just understood eight there, but afterward maybe, hikbid, hifil of kavad, which would be the antonym of kalal. So this is to make weighty instead of to make light. This is to bless instead of curse. This is to show prominence instead of belittling. So he, we're assuming Yahweh is the subject of these verbs here. He does wheel, he does woe, he brings down to Sheol, he brings back up, 1 Samuel 2:6. So he's behind all of this by means of Assyria, the rod of his anger. That's in 10:5 of Isaiah. Okay, so then the Derech Hayam, the way of the sea. And across Ever HaYarden, across the Jordan, and Galilee of the Gentiles. So these would be other names, apparently, for the areas of Zebulun and Naphtali. All right. So how is Yahweh going to kaved, bring honor and glory and importance to these people who have been renamed and taken over by Tiglath-Pileser III? Well, this is what's going to happen in verse 1. In the Hebrew text, the people, ha-ho-kalim, ba-koshek. So here, you don't want to spiritualize koshek here. The koshek would be the Neo-Assyrian army. We actually have this idea in 5 verse 30. So we could just look at that rather quickly. So we historicize the darkness. So he will growl upon them in that day like the growling of the sea. And he will look to a land, behold, Koshek Tsar. See, he'll look to the land and behold, darkness will be the distress or the enemy. And the whole context of this latter part of Isaiah 5 indicates that this is the Neo-Assyrian juggernaut flexing its muscles with TP3. So that's the people walking in darkness. Now, it's certainly spiritual darkness too. But initially it would be Assyria. Ra'u or Gadol. They saw. So this would probably be a so-called prophetic perfect. It's such a done deal that it's a called perfect third comma plural from Ra'ah. So the people walking perpetually, note the atemporal participle there. It's just an ongoing dark experience. Dularu, Magadu, and Galazu. They'll see a great light. Okay. Yosheveh, and this is a little odd in its syntax. Normally you don't have a participle and construct that then is followed by a noun that has a preposition in front of it. See? That's why there would be a flag on the play here. Editors just say delete metrica causa for metrical reasons. But that's a very, very, very old way of doing text critical work in the Old Testament. But they do spot some syntactical anomaly here. So the ones dwelling, maybe there was just a mame that dropped off. Then we'd have a call active participle not in construct. So the ones dwelling in the land of a deep shadow, Tzal Mavet. Hebrew rarely has compound nouns unless they're proper nouns, right? In terms of like Yeshayahu, Yeshah and Yahu, Yahweh saves. Lots of compound nouns in proper nouns, but in just regular nouns, they don't compound them. So probably not a shadow of death. Zeo is the Hebrew word for shadow, Mavet, death. It's used in some context in the book of Job to be parallel with Sheol. And that might fit the context a little bit better in terms of Sheol being under God's judgment. These are people dwelling in the land of being completely separated from Yahweh. And a light... again, we have a call perfect. A light dawned upon them. These people who have been renamed and exiled. Okay, and then it gets a little dicier here as we go along. But not too bad. Verse 2. Hifil of Rabbah, third hay. They were originally third yods. So there's where you have the yod coming back on here, beta. So he... Rabbah would mean to make great. He will make great the nation, not... See, that doesn't like sound very logical, right? So this would happen any number of times in the Hebrew Bible. There's a K-Ray Kathiv here. So we go to the margin, you see the Kof there, and it would probably be lo, the preposition lamed with a third masculine singular pronominal suffix. So rather than lo, not, lo to him. So you, I'm sorry, that would be, maybe I said he will enlarge, but it's you will enlarge the nation for himself, kind of literally, going with what is to be read and not what is to be written. You will make great, hifil of gadol, you will make great the joy. And then we go from the noun simcha to the verb samach. And because of that, Psalm Ku lefaneka. So they will rejoice before you. And then we have, so this is the third instance of the root samach. Kesimkat ba katsir. Like the rejoicing in the harvest. So that would usually be a pretty good time. Kaasher yagilu. So here we have a kind of the fourth word for joy in this verse, but here it would be, you know, another synonym, gil, like avi gil, avi joy would be our first daughter's name. Anyway, just as they will rejoice, and here comes a pl infinitive construct with a temporal marker base. And an object suffix, third masculine plural. Everybody kind of see that? So the since this is a shorter verse, shorter pericope, we can look at these details here. But the patak under the chet would be our diagnostic marker that it would be a pl, infinitive construct. Because the infinitive construct in Hebrew is built off the imperfect. And in a pl imperfect, the diagnostic vowel would be a patak under the first consonant, which we have here. The Dagesh 14, the Lamed tells me I'm looking at a D stem, in this case a pl as well. So, when they kalak, when they divide shalal, so when they divide the plunder, so there's going to be a victory here, apparently, because if you have a victory, you have plunder. Of course, this would be one of Isaiah's children's names, right? Mahar Shalal Hasvaz. Speed the prey, hasten the spoil. So it's rendered in like the NIV. So just kind of, you know, get this picture in your mind. The nation will be enlarged, so that's good, more land. There's going to be an increase of joy. Before Yahweh, like when we have a lot of harvest, and like when we divide the shalal. So this is a great picture here of the exuberance, then finally, of what happens when the great light does show up climactically. At least in Matthew 4, but I think climactically, you don't need any sun or moon in the city, right?
That's pretty climactic.
Yeah, okay, in Revelation 21, the Lord God is the light, and the Lamb is the lamp, and they are the temple too. So that would be climactic or gadol. Everything up to that point, I believe, is provisional. Is that a good way to say it, Mr. Biblical Theology?
Proleptic.
Proleptic, yes. We have light now, but there's more coming.
There's a lot more coming.
There's a whole lot more coming. According to the Hebrew writer, I was looking at this earlier this morning, in Hebrews 6, verse 5, we've only tasted of the things that are coming.
Right.
We haven't even eaten it yet. Right. So it's very provisional now. So we go on. Verse 3 then, indeed, probably this isn't a severative key, not a temporal key, not when, but indeed a yoke of his burden. Sabal would be burden. All like Sabal and Matah and Noges and Shebet, these are all words connected with Israel's oppression in Egypt. If we look at Exodus 5 through 10, these words would come quite often. So there are echoes of an oppression here, not by the Egyptians here, but by the Neo-Assyrians. The yoke, the all of his burden, and all of these nouns are fronted before the verb for emphasis to kind of emphatically say this is really dark. and the rod of his shoulder, and the shebet of the one mistreating him. The rod of the one mistreating him. Now, ha no geis, call active participle, masculine singular, with the holam over the nun. So this is kind of paradigmatically what the Egyptians do to the Israelites. They're the no geis guys. They are the taskmasters. They whip them. They enslave them. They kill them. They murder them. So all of this is fronted before the hifil verb, het tau tau. You will annihilate, okay, all of this. So the yoke and the staff and the rod, they're going to be busted and broken. And all of this will be like the day of Midian, which we've already commented on. Okay, well, I think that hopefully gives people enough homiletical ideas, and we'll move on to the gospel lesson. We'll give you, we'll increase not only the shalal, but the eights, the time.
The time, that's right. And we could sing now the old bird song, there is a time for everything, to everything turns.
If you want to do that, but don't include me, please.
Okay, fine.
Yeah.